Okay, the next item is going to be item 13, Morrowbie groundwater degradation, and we'll request from staff Mr. Harvey Packard. Would you please
present Thank you, Chair. The item? Over the years, we've had quite a bit of discussion and correspondence with Ms. Steggy and some of the other residents of Morro Bay. What you have in your agenda package is only a portion of all that, but this is the opportunity for Ms. Steggy to provide her viewpoint directly to the board. I want to say that staff does agree that, and I imagine the city also agrees, that the city's collection system does have its leaks and faults. No one, I believe, is denying that. The city also has a collection system management program. It has a budget for preventative maintenance and capital improvements, and prioritizes these improvements to its collection systems. I want to say that, and I also want to point out on a map what we're talking about. This is Google Map, and it's showing the Morro Valley. This is Highway 41 here, Morro Rock down here, and Morro Creek comes down this side of the valley, Little Morro Creek on the other side. Most of the agriculture in the upper part of the basin is orchards. Down here close to the bottom of the basin is more row crops. And you can see that the basin pinches very tightly right here. All the groundwater and all surface water goes through this little narrow spot before crossing under Highway 1 on its way out to the ocean. The city's wells that we're having this discussion about are there's four of them in a row right along here along this frontage road just west of the freeway.
Can you pull up so we can see the wells in relation to the narrows?
So here's the narrows. The wells are on the north side of the creek right here. This is a city park, and the city's wastewater treatment plant is right here. So just to orient you a little bit, and then I'll turn the time over to Ms. Steggy.
Also, if we have any additional blue cards for this specific item, we'd appreciate receiving them. I have two blue cards request.
Right, board members, you do have Ms. Steggy's PowerPoint in your blue packets.
Do you want to introduce her?
Good morning. I'm Linda Steggy, and this is Marla Jo Bertone-Sadowski. She's going to be presenting some of the slides this morning. All right, is that better?
That's better, thank you.
All right, perfect. All right, thank you. We've come here today to ask that you help us to establish a productive dialogue with RWQCB staff in order to ensure that a serious ongoing problem can be appropriately dealt with. We believe that dilapidated sewer lines in Morro Bay are polluting the groundwater, including the Morro Basin aquifer, and polluting the ocean. We believe that high nitrate levels in the Morro Basin municipal wells are one sign of the problem. RWQCB staff has supported the theory that the nitrates in the wells come primarily from fertilizer used in the Morro Valley. We will present a body of evidence that we believe clearly proves that high nitrate levels in the wells are caused by exfiltrating sewage. We will also provide information and evidence related to specific areas of disagreement with your staff. We hope that with your help and that RWQCB staff and local clean water activists can work together, share our knowledge, and work toward a solution to this serious water issue. Ideally, we would like to see testing of the groundwater in the vicinity of the leaking sewer lines and repair of those lines to prevent further contamination of groundwater and the ocean.
This graph shows the nitrate...
Excuse me, would you identify yourself, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Marla Jo Bertone-Sadowski, and I'm an author of the original report here. This graph shows the nitrate levels in Morro Basin Well 3 from 1954 through 2006. A slight increase in the mid to late 90s appears to be the result of problems with the Atascadero trunk line that resulted in leaking sewage. The problems were finally discovered in 1998. Much of the line was replaced. Then in 2002, there was a major change in the pattern of nitrate levels. That pattern had never been seen before, but has continued to the present. Prior to 2002, nitrate levels in the Morro Basin wells have never exceeded the maximum contaminant level, and in November, nitrate levels had been declining, not rising. Every November since 2002, nitrate levels have spiked during the state water shutdown when the wells are in use. Levels quickly return to normal when well usage decreases. Something had to cause this sudden change. This graph covers the time period between September 2009 through May 2013. It includes the nitrate levels in the four Morro Basin wells and along the bottom well production levels. The nitrate levels clearly correspond to well production levels. The extra water production spike in early 2010 occurred when state water project deliveries were radically cut and the city had to rely on the wells early that year. As you can see, the November pattern remains consistent over time. Because a major change in nitrate levels could not occur without some cause, we began to look for some event or series of events that could have caused the change. We discovered that the timing of a major MTBE remediation near the wastewater treatment plant corresponded with the timing of the nitrate level pattern change. In 1997, Morro Bay's primary drinking water source was switched from well water to state water. The plan was to use the wells as backup, particularly during the state water maintenance shutdowns in November. In 1998, after MTBE was found in groundwater near the wells, use of the Morro Basin wells was suspended entirely until the all clear was given in 2002. When the wells were used in November 2002 for the first time in several years, the nitrate spiked well over the MCL for the first time since records were kept. This diagram, the original of which was produced by the MTBE remediation company, shows the extent of the work done. The former location of a gas station, which was the source of the MTBE, is shown by the beige shaded rectangle at the upper right. Extensive excavations were done in that area. The numerous black dots show the location of the 63 monitoring and extraction wells that were drilled into the Morro Basin aquifer, which feeds the city wells. The blue shaded rectangle near the bottom of the diagram represents the location of Morro Bay Municipal Well 3 and 4. The red rectangle just above the municipal well location shows the location of two of the monitoring wells where MTBE was detected. Note the very short distance between these wells and the municipal wells. The wastewater treatment plant is a short distance to the east of the area shown in the diagram. This diagram provides another view of the same general area and shows the location of the remediation site in reference to the boundaries of the Morro Basin aquifer. The site of the former gasoline station, where extensive excavations were done, is indicated by the blue dot. Note that it lies directly on the aquifer boundary. The location of the city well field, including wells 3, 4, 14, and 15, is shown in the center. The boundaries of the aquifer are indicated by the black lines. The narrows area of the aquifer near the center of the image is aptly called the narrows. To the east of the narrows is the Morro Valley. Here's another view of the same area. On this slide, the location of the gasoline station is indicated in red. The city wells are indicated by the series of blue dots. The wastewater treatment plant is at the lower left. In this image, the dark line shows the location of two gravity sewer trunk lines that run under Main Street and directly past the site of the gasoline station. One of these lines is shared by Morro Bay and Cayucas. The other is used by Cayucas only. We believe that exfiltrated sewage from the shared Morro Bay Cayucas line and perhaps the Cayucas line as well is the primary source of the nitrates in the city wells. We believe that excavations and or wells drilled as part of the MTBE remediation work created breaches that allowed exfiltrated sewage to enter the aquifer. As you know, exfiltration can occur when sewer lines lie above the water table. Nearly all of the lines in Morro Bay do. After leaving the pipes, the exfiltrated sewage can percolate down into the groundwater and, in the case of gravity sewer lines, can travel through the gravel-lined trenches where the lines are located. We believe that a large amount of sewage is constantly exfiltrating from the Morro Bay Cayucas shared trunk line that runs under Main Street. That opinion is based on a study we did in 2007. We viewed numerous video inspections of lines all over the city. The images in the slide are from the section of the line between manhole 1 and 3 on Main Street. The damage is typical of what we saw in lines all over the city. In this one short section, about 1,000 feet, we found offset joints, separated joints, cracks, bellies, sagging in the line, and a manhole with the pan missing. In some videos reviewed for the study, we found serious damage that had been reflected in earlier inspections of the same area. Inspection videos show that the sunken sewer main connection shown at upper right existed for at least 7 years. This slide quotes material from a 2000 study by Amick and Burgess. People claiming that exfiltration cannot be a major source of the well nitrates have cited the text shown in red, which says sewage has self-sealing properties. They failed to mention the text shown in blue, which says that at higher flow rates and pressure heads, the self-sealing property is broken. The pressure in the shared Main Street trunk line has often been high enough to blow the Island Street manhole cover off and into the street. A 12/7/2007 email from a consultant to a senior city staff member shows that one incomplete and out-of-context reference to the material quoted here was given to the consultant by a senior city staff member. It subsequently appeared in the consultant's report. Those arguing that exfiltration is not a serious problem also fail to mention that the Amick and Burgess study is about the serious problems related to exfiltration. They also fail to mention the very high rates of exfiltration cited by Amick and Burgess. For example, those in the table on this slide. Note that in one series of tests, exfiltration rates on 7th Street in Berkeley were estimated to be 56% of total flow, and on Pardee Street, 34% of total flow. This graph shows the relative nitrate levels in the Morro Basin wells. Well 3, shown in blue, consistently has the highest nitrates, followed in order by wells 4, 14, and 15. This order corresponds to the distance of the wells from the Main Street sewer trunk lines and the MTBE remediation site. The closer a well is to the sewer lines, the higher the nitrate level. The pattern holds through all seasons, whether or not the wells are being used, regardless of rainfall, and regardless of whether Morro Creek is running or is completely dry. Morro Bay Mutual Water has 2 wells farther from the trunk lines. They have consistently low nitrate levels. Yet these 2 wells get their water from the Morro Basin aquifer just like the city wells.
Now I will present some key issues on which we and RWQCB staff have expressed differing opinions, and I'd like to just note that, as I was discussing with Mr. Packard earlier, there is absolutely nothing personal about this. They believe passionately in what they say, and we believe passionately in what we say. We would really like to be able to become allies and work together on these issues. For the first one, RWQCB staff says that due diligence was performed in nitrate source studies. We believe that investigation of potential nitrate sources was insufficient and incomplete. A September 28, 2007 letter from a consultant to a senior city staff member discusses the desirability of taking, quote, grab samples, unquote, from the shared trunk line, the Cayucas trunk line, and the sewer plant in order to, quote, check on the likelihood of sewer exfiltration, unquote, as the source, unquote, of the nitrates. This doesn't appear to have been done. Under the heading sample description, laboratory results in the consultant's study, indicate the sources of samples tested. None are for samples from either trunk line or from the plant. A nitrogen isotope study was done for one city well. As the data on the slide shows, the nitrate signatures detected in the samples are a close match for those given for sewage in one study that we found. They're completely inconsistent with the standard nitrate signature for fertilizer. RWQCB staff said that the Piper diagrams in the city's nitrate study show that wastewater is not a likely source of the nitrate contamination. We disagree. Nitrate levels rise in November when the wells are used during state water maintenance shutdown. They rapidly decline when well use decreases. Nitrate levels are much lower in the spring and summer, and that is when the samples were gathered for testing for other components of sewage. To determine if the high nitrates in the wells are from exfiltrated sewage, samples to test for other components of sewage should be taken when the nitrates are high. However, those samples were drawn when the nitrates are low. This renders the Piper diagrams essentially meaningless because the data they're based on come from samples drawn at the wrong time. RWQCB staff said that the city-funded study demonstrates a correlation in nitrate increases in Moro Valley nitrate and nitrate in well water. We believe that is incorrect. The 1980 and 2007 samples that were compared were not drawn in the same month. This ignores seasonal patterns in fertilizer use. The study failed to address key variables related to sampling locations, including possible changes in nearby land use over time. RWQCB staff countered these arguments recently, saying nitrates travel slowly and at different rates. So, quote, it would be impossible to correlate one season's nitrate loading event to concentration increases in city wells. Assuming that is true, over a period of years, we should see a correspondence between patterns in nitrate loading in the Moro Valley and patterns in nitrate levels in the wells. Data for the years 1995 through 2013 shows no such correspondence. The city study says, quote, historically, nitrate concentrations in November were in decline rather than peaking, unquote, but cites no changes in farming activities that could account for the long-term pattern of nitrate levels in the Moro Basin wells. RWQCB staff said that the material from the Amick and Burgess study was correctly applied in the city study. We disagree. As previously demonstrated, the material was incomplete and out of context. According to Amick and Burgess, exfiltration rates can be very high. For example, as previously noted, the rate in one test in Berkeley, California was 56% of total flow in one line and 34% in another. RWQCB staff said that the city of Moro Bay was proactive in operating and maintaining its collection system. We believe that numerous video inspections of the collection system show otherwise. In 2007, Sadowski and Brutone conducted an independent review of a sample of video inspections covering approximately 1.52 miles of various wastewater collection system lines in Moro Bay. They also reviewed a sample of logs for tapes that we did not view. Those logs cover inspections of approximately 1.89 miles of collection lines. For the lines covered by their video inspection review, they found that every 11.4 feet on average, there was a pipe defect that could allow exfiltration of sewage. In some cases, the defects appeared in inspections done several years apart, indicating that although damage was known, it was not corrected. One very serious example of neglect came to light when a large line that runs down Atascadero Road collapsed adjacent to the desal plant near the wastewater treatment plant. And a 1999 letter to the city manager regarding the way MTBE found its way into the wastewater treatment plant indicates that, quote, the pipeline damage that was apparent in past video inspections is the likely point of introduction. RWQCB staff said that the area under the city wells is likely hydraulically disconnected from the MTBE remediation site. We believe that the evidence shows there is a hydraulic connection. The urgency regarding the MTBE cleanup at the Shell station site was in large part due to the potential for contamination of city wells. MTBE was detected in monitoring well cluster 26, indicated by the red box. Oops, I'm sorry. I can go back to the previous slide. Oh, come on. There we go. Sorry. MTBE was detected in monitoring well cluster 26, indicated by the red box on the slide. The location of wells, city wells 3 and 4 is shown by the blue box. We estimate the distance between the monitoring wells and the city wells to be 100 feet or less. Movement of MTBE was demonstrated to be associated with production at the well field, as noted in a May 1st, 2006 letter from a consultant to a city employee. The letter noted that closure of the remediation site was inadvisable for several reasons, including these. One, quote, the second problem with dismissing the MTBE detections at the monitoring well 26 well cluster is that the timing and behavior of the detections appear associated with production at the well field, unquote. And two, quote, MTBE concentrations in groundwater collected from the well cluster have been detected during the sampling events immediately following each water use event at the city's well field. RWQCB staff said that the production at the Morro Basin well field has been declining since 2009, but we believe that Morro Bay's water production data indicates it has not. The graph on this page was produced using Morro Bay water production data. It covers the period from September 2009 through May 2013. The upper line in blue shows total production for the well field, and the lines below it show production for individual wells. You'll note that well production spiked in early 2010. That was after a very sharp cutback in state water deliveries when the wells were used more frequently. But subsequently, the production returned to normal and has remained steady ever since, with the usual November spikes resulting from the annual state water maintenance shutdowns. Staff recently amended its position, stating that if you omit the 2010 data when Morro Bay did not have state water supply, then perhaps the pumping trend is stable. The graph in this slide shows nitrate levels for well 3 in blue and rainfall levels for Morro Bay in red. The period covered is January 2010 through May 2013. RWQCB staff originally said there is a strong inverse correlation between nitrate concentrations and creek flows. We believe this data contradicts this statement. It shows a direct correlation because higher rainfall increases creek flow. Staff recently clarified its position to say that there is an inverse correlation in that low rainfall triggers higher nitrate concentrations in the wells, and higher rainfall causes declining nitrate concentrations, and that is what causes the nitrate spikes. On the other hand, we believe the spikes are triggered by November well usage, which pulls exfiltrated sewage into the wells. To support our view, we cite the data used in preparing the city's study. To quote that study, the pattern of fluctuations, however, appears linked to well field production. Nitrate concentration peaks between 2002 and 2006 coincide with full-scale production at the well field, which occurs annually around November during the state water project shutdowns. Historically, nitrate concentrations in November were in decline rather than peaking. Thus, it appears to us that the staff's hypothesis does not hold up in the long term. RWQCB staff said that the relative nitrate levels in the Morro Basin wells correspond to the distances between the wells and Morro Creek. They say that the closer a well is to the creek, the more the water is diluted. We disagree with this theory. During the summer and early fall, the creek is dry, thus it cannot dilute the underground water source used by the wells. The dry state of the creek in summer and fall is confirmed by observation, and RWQCB staff has referred to the creek as ephemeral. The two Morro Bay Mutual water wells are located to the south of the city wells on the other side of Morro Creek. They have always had very low nitrate levels, although they too get their water from the Morro Basin aquifer. One of the Morro Bay Mutual water wells is close to the creek, but the other is farther from it than all but one of the city wells. Both are used. As shown on the slide, in May 2011, the nitrate levels in city wells ranged from 62 to 20. Readings for the Morro Bay Mutual water wells were 2.2 and 2.4. This pattern has been consistent over the years.
So can you wrap up your presentation?
We are at the wrap-up slide now.
My goodness, you're within a second here.
Perfect timing.
Congratulations.
All right, it's about one more minute here if you will bear with us. This concludes our slide presentation. We believe it is clear that there is substantial evidence that sewage is the primary source of nitrates in the wells. We also believe that whether or not one accepts that premise, it is clear that the shared Main Street trunk line needs immediate and substantial repair. And we believe that the Cayucos line may be in bad shape as well. In a February 2008 letter to Roger Briggs, a Morro Bay City staff member wrote that the city and Cayucos had been in the, quote, planning phase, unquote, for repair of the shared trunk line since the previous fall. That was 2008. It is now 2014. 6 years have passed, and the line has still not been repaired. The city now wants to wait until the location for the new sewer plant is chosen. Given the potential sites being considered for the plant, most of the Main Street trunk line's path should remain as it is now. We urge the board to require prompt repairs and put a stop to the ongoing contamination of our aquifer and the ocean, and to support closer and more cooperative relations between RWQCB staff and concerned citizens. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
You're welcome, and congratulations on your timing here.
Yes.
And I have three speaker cards, so what I'd like to do is to have individual speakers come forward, and then I think we have a representative from the city here, and then I will ask our staff to respond, and then it will give then an opportunity for our board to comment, ask specific questions. So the first speaker card I have is from Lindy Owen.
Good morning again, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. As a neighbor to Morro Bay and also concerned about water pollution from human sources, I attended almost 5 years ago one of the early talks about where to put the treatment plant in Morro Bay. And we urged them to not try to rebuild in the location they were due to the obvious seawater rising. But I have sort of kept on track with Morro Bay. What was astounding to me also about some time back in that same era was that we were told that Morro Bay's pollution was not, the nitrates were coming from farmland, which was rather humorous because in Los Osos we have fairly the same situation with septic tanks that were, very few of them have been shown to fail or have been failing, but our pollution came from human contamination from our septic tanks. So, and then I discovered at some point that half of the sewage that was going through the pipes in Morro Bay for treatment did not arrive. In other words, half of what went down the toilets arrived for treatment. Therefore, we have known for years that Morro Bay has some serious pipeline problems. They have a 40 to 50-year-old sewer. This is what happens to conventional gravity sewers. And this is what I think you need to address today is doing some of those repairs. I don't know if lining those pipes is a good technology to go, but something needs to be done. And the sooner that we really address real problems rather than let political problems direct us towards solutions, the sooner we will actually be able to do some really good work at saving our basins. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And our next speaker card is with Betty Winholtz. Thank you.
Thank you. My name's Betty Winholtz. I am a resident of Morro Bay. I am also a former city council member from the years 2003 to 2010. So I can't tell you how pleased I am that you're hearing this issue before your board today, because it's a really important issue and it's one that has needed to be addressed for a long time. I hope that you take it quite seriously. I hope that you will do as Ms. Owen said, and let's set aside the politics and move forward. Let's get some money for Morro Bay and get things fixed, or at least get them on track with what they said that they should have done. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And the last speaker card I have is Mr. Richard Sandowski.
Good morning, Richard Sadowski. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. I also am a certified wastewater collection system operator. I have the highest grade that you can get in that position. I'm also a mechanical engineer by profession. I had co-authored several of the reports that were presented to you about 7 years ago. I also was involved in getting FEMA funding for liquefaction damage for Cayucas back in 2003 during the San Simeon earthquake, where we were able to get $1.2 million pre-approved from FEMA funding from damage to collection systems. This particular issue that we have here in Morro Bay, and as you know, we have a huge drought issue. We've been mentioning to the city council since 2006 that the drought is going to be severe. And what we would like from the regional board is a collaborative effort with the California Coastal Commission, the Ocean Protection Council, the Cal EPA, and helping us as a community to be a showcase for moving, doing a managed retreat of the wastewater treatment plant and turning it into a water reclamation facility, and correcting and addressing this problem in an integral manner, because you can't separate the treatment plant from the collection. It's tied together. This the Morro Basin Aquifer, we can blow science all day long. You know, like, what's worse? We're not saying that it's not some of it coming from farmers, but we're saying a significant, what we feel, is the infrastructure damage. So I urge you, this is an urgent matter. This has been an emergency 7 years ago. Please help us get the funding and help us move in the right direction in solving this problem. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And do we have a representative from the city? So if you could give us some input, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Rob Livick, Public Services Director and City Engineer for the City of Morro Bay, licensed civil engineer. I'm not going to state that Morro Bay does not have defects in its sewer collection system. We do. We have a CIP program for the maintenance of that and repair. We have a budget that we budget for that. We have a sanitary sewer management plan and a sewer master plan that we work from on those issues. We have lots of data on our wells that show that there is high nitrates and that, but not high in other indicators of human sewage. And that we do have, working with the upstream agriculture, and we have a settlement agreement with reduction of their ongoing use of, overuse of high nitrate fertilizer. That's the extent of my presentation, but I'll be happy to answer any questions that the board might have for me. Thank you.
Thank you for your input. And what I'm going to ask, if you stand by, I'm going to have our staff also respond, and then we'll give them a complete overview for our board to ask for comments, clarifications, etc. So, Mr. Packard, do we have any additional input?
So, Harvey Packard again. I'm up here with Dean Thomas, a geologist on our staff. I guess we could go through and refute all the evidence that you've seen. I don't see any point in doing that. I'm not sure why we're having an argument, in fact, here. I'm happy to stipulate that the city has defects in its system and that we should be working with the city to get them fixed. If the city needs help with financing, we're certainly willing and able to work with them with state board on loans or whatever the process is. So I'm not sure if you want more of a technical discussion. Dean can get into that if we want, but I don't really see a point in doing that.
No, I wanted to give you an opportunity, you know, to provide sort of
right.
Overview, and certainly I think my colleagues here have some questions.
Yeah.
And
our position all along has been that you need to look at this from the perspective of lines of evidence. There are many things going on. It's a complicated situation. Our position is that the preponderance of the data and evidence, and including many lines of evidence, shows to us that the main source of nitrate in the city wells is from upstream agriculture. As Mr. Livick said, we have been working with those upstream farmers. They have reduced their usage of nitrogen. That's not saying that there could be influences from leaking wastewater, but in our opinion, that's not the principal cause.
Thank you. And before moving to my colleagues' questions and input, I'd like to compliment the presenters. I think you spent a lot of time in putting this information together, and we appreciate your efforts at bringing forth a lot of details. Thank you very much. So I'll start on my right. Do we have any question or input? Mr. Johnston?
I have one question, and I confess this is a difficult thing for me to wrap my head around in terms of the science being thrown back and forth. My question is E. coli. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Packard, is that there's not significant E. coli showing up in the well samples. Now, does it behave differently than nitrates in terms of how fast it breaks down? If it were coming from the, I guess the nitrates don't break down, but if it were in fact a significant cause of the nitrates in the city wells, would that E. coli, does it break down sufficiently quickly, or is that how significant is it that it's not showing up in those well samples?
I would state that the nitrate is more of a conservative tracer than E. coli, meaning that if nitrate is coming out of those wells, you'd be more likely to see it than E. coli, which would have to be coming out of the collection system at the same time. If sewage is leaking out of the lines, both nitrogen and E. coli are going to be coming out. We would, in my opinion, we should see more E. coli than we are seeing if the primary predominant source is wastewater. But it's not even that simple, because most of the nitrogen in the collection system is not nitrate and would have to be converted to nitrate before it reaches those wells. So there's a lot of stuff going on there.
Okay, so does the E. coli break down? Is there an alternate explanation for why it might be leaking from the sewage pipes but not showing up in the wells?
The bacteria tend to be filtered through the groundwater, as filtered by the soil matrix as it moves through the saturated zone.
Yeah. So the lack of E. coli isn't necessarily probative.
I don't know if it proves anything. My view of the data is that we should, if the predominant source is wastewater, we would see more coliform. Thank
you. If I could add something to that is, you also have to talk about travel times, travel distances, volumes of flow. There are a lot of factors you have to look at. And I think one thing Mr. Packard alluded to is, given the production that comes out of these wells, to get the water quality that we're seeing from the sewer lines, I also would expect that it means that a fair amount of water has to be coming from the sewer lines and entering the wells. And I personally would think that you would see more bacteria.
You.
Chair Emeritus Young,
you
can carry this title for the rest of the
year. Thank you, Dr. Wolf. So, Mr. Packard, if the main source you think is ag, but a smaller contributing source might be sewage, wouldn't that be enough of a reason to maybe look at this a little more carefully? I mean, certainly ag waste doesn't present the same health risk as human waste would.
So if I could answer that, and I would like, I want to answer that question. I'd like the Public Works Director to please come back up to the podium. I have a couple questions I think are important that need to be asked in regards to the public health threat. Can you tell me, do you have a general permit from the State Water Board for your sanitary sewer collection system?
Yes, we do.
And can you give the board kind of just a brief overview of what's required to be in compliance with that permit?
I'm going to ask Bruce Keough, our wastewater division manager. He'll know much of the more details about that to address the board. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Bruce Keough. I'm the wastewater division manager for the city of Morro Bay. Sewer system management plan has 11 components mandated by the general order of the state of California. And that ranges from, I don't know if I can rattle off all 11 of them right now, but it is a pretty comprehensive program that oversees any sewer system. So it has general operations and maintenance requirements. It has system capacity. and handling capabilities. It has response to sanitary sewer overflows. We just worked our SSMP over recently. Inspections, it has fat oils and greases components, so it has pretreatment components to it. It's a pretty comprehensive document that covers all aspects of the sewer system.
Mr. Young, I was, that program, development of that program was under me when I was at the State Water Board, and also the annual reporting that we did to the State Water Board. And I can tell you that the reduction, for example, in sanitary sewer overflows, which is a direct reflection of partly of maintenance, has decreased substantially statewide since that permit went into place. Thank you. The next question is, Mr. Young commented about public health. Can you tell me what happens? So raw water is one thing. Water that is served to the public is entirely different. Can you tell me how you, so assuming there are nitrates, there's bacteria or whatever, I mean, raw water is raw water, and all raw water that goes through a municipal system is treated. Can you tell us what you do to treat that water and whether or not your water that you serve to the residences meet Department of Public Health standards?
That's the first thing I want to address. That's our primary goal, is serving safe water to, if I'm wearing my water hat, to the citizens of Morro Bay. That water is tested on a daily basis when those wells are in production. A portion of that water is run through our desalinization plant. We have low-pressure membranes, brackish water treatment for removal of nitrates. That water is disinfected and introduced, blended at our King's Street tanks, and distributed to the citizens of Morro Bay. Now, one of the acceptable treatment methods for nitrate is blending. So a portion of that raw water does, upon disinfection, does go into the distribution system and is blended at our King Street tanks, but blended down below the maximum contaminant level. I won't say that we've never had a nitrate upset in town in the, before I arrived at the city in early 2000s, there was a spike in high nitrates. We had a rupture of one of our mains and turn on those wells. We did not have the treatment capabilities that we do today at our desalinization plant to treat that water. We did an emergency notification to the public, the boil order notification. And like I said, our goal is to provide safe drinking water to the citizens of Morro Bay.
Mr. Young, did this answer your question?
You know what? I somehow wasn't able to really complete my question or get into the meat of what I was trying to ask. So
please do.
Thank you very much. Are you testing for human viruses in your the well water that's coming up in this area that allegedly is being contaminated by human sewage?
We test for everything that's required under the Safe Drinking Water Act. We do the bacteriological testing and the organic and inorganic tested as required by the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Right. But the answer to my question is no.
No.
Okay. Thank you. And if there was human sewage getting into the water system, then, and you're not specifically looking at that, and you're not testing for viruses, there's the possibility that there is contamination coming into the water that's being treated. Is that correct?
I suppose there is a remote possibility. We do test for other components. For one of them is MBAS, which is also an indicator of human sewage, and we have non-detect of MBAS, methyl blue activated substance. It's basically tests for a foaming agent, detergents in the water. So we don't have any indication that that is in our wells.
Okay, and I think it was you who said that other than the nitrogen, there would be other components or other constituents that would indicate human source, other than the one you just mentioned, the dye, that should be appearing in your sampling. If there was a considerable amount of human source, what are the other components?
MBAS and E. coli is what we test for.
Okay, that you test for, but what else could you be testing for if you wanted to completely rule out?
I think one of the components that is a good indicator that doesn't, what I understand is caffeine. I guess we can't stop drinking coffee, and it is persistent in human sewage and would show up as in the wastewater. But that's not a regulated contaminant that is typically tested for. We do test for the latest EPA round, the UCMR3 components, those unregulated pharmaceuticals that are just getting the light of day, and we have undetected those components.
Is the MBAS a regulated?
Yes, it is. It's required to be tested for.
Okay. And then this particular section of sewer line, is it scheduled to be relined or replaced at any time in the future?
Yes, it is, and it's it is a jointly owned line. It's owned by the City of Morro Bay and the Cayuga Sanitary District jointly. We have it on our CIP program. We've bumped it back in priority based on determining the location of our wastewater treatment plant and negotiations with Cayucas over that process. But we continue to maintain the system upstream of there to reduce INI upstream of there. If we're talking leaking sewer lines, our primary issue is inflow into the sewer lines because we do get a lot of water that comes into the sewer lines. That's how the MTBE was detected, was that INI water entering the sewer line, and that Atascadero Road line was lined to prevent that INI from coming in. So our bigger issue with leaking sewer lines is water getting into the lines, not sewer exfiltrating out of the lines. Mm-hmm.
So can you give us an estimate for a time frame when you're going to put this section of line back up to the priority level that it had before?
I think we need to get further along with our wastewater treatment plant siting study. If we go into the Morro Valley, we'll be relocating a major pump station, and that may have an effect on that. I would say by August, City Council is going to make a decision on the location of that line, and we'll be ready to propose a revision to our CIP for a collection system at that time based on the priority of the wastewater treatment plant location.
Mm-hmm. Any reason why you haven't sampled for caffeine?
Other than that we're not required to sample for caffeine.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Dr. Hunter?
Yeah, thank you for clarifying the MTBE issue. So that's helpful to me to understand the difference why MTBE is showing up or was showing up. I only have one question for you at this point. As the drought continues, and we are all assuming that it, worst case, that we have a number of years going forward, would that change the priority? Because you're quite a ways from, I mean, siting a plant and actually starting to implement the construction and so forth and changing collection lines and improving the collection system. It's quite a ways down the road. So as the drought continues, how can you characterize for me how increased use of well water may exacerbate the problem that allegedly is occurring, and in particular, the priority for repairing or replacing or whatever has to be done to maintain the collection system, especially in that section that's been referred to?
Yeah, I can venture to say that we will not wait until we've actually gone under construction for a wastewater treatment plant to take on this collection system repair. But we need to know where we're progressing to. And by August of this year, Council will have made that decision on the final location of the wastewater treatment plant. We'll be progressing will propose for the next budget year what our CIP is for our collection system. So I envision that August of this year, we'll have a direction to go for our wastewater treatment plant. We can make proposals for our CIP projects at that time. If we're going out the Moro Valley, we'll have to make major collection system changes, move a pump station up to that near that location, and we may want to reconfigure that line, so that may have to delay until the pump station. But if we're going to another location, for example, out the Choro Valley, that would not have very much impact into that line location, and we would proceed forward with maintenance on that line. So I'm envisioning by budget next year, we will have by August of this year, we will have a direction on the wastewater treatment plant and then propose that for the upcoming year's budget for maintenance of our collection system.
So would you say that the information that's brought forward today by a number of residents from Moro Bay that have this technical expertise and ability to help bring information forward to the city, are you integrating that information into the planning and prioritization of maintenance and so forth, or are you continuing to operate with the city's studies that have been conducted? Because in my view, it seems that some of the information, especially noted today, suggests that there are problems, as we all know, that these older systems begin to show degradation, and leakage is one of them. So is the city allowing for the information coming forth from the residents?
The study that the city has prepared and under our consultants, or hydrogeologic consultants, has been vetted through many review agencies, prepared by licensed geologists, licensed civil engineers. We put a lot of credence into that work. Not to say that we don't take public input into our process. Of course, the council listens to public input through the budget and the CIP. But design professionals have a really a higher level that we need to work towards. And not to say that we don't put any credence into public input, we do. But we have to weigh that against the design professionals' experience and the evidence that they brought forward, and prioritize those projects based on that.
Yeah, I would just finally say, it seems to me that some of the trend analysis that they've done is strong suggestion that as the wells are increasingly used, nitrate increases may, in fact, be coming from the mm-hmm. sewage system, collection system. And so I'm hoping that the city will integrate that knowledge, whether you consider it anecdotal. I would not. I think they've done a very good job of demonstrating and providing illustrations over time of the changes. And so I'm hoping that the city will recognize that information and the effort that's gone into it. And the last thing I would just direct to Mr. Packard, if you could comment, I think Ms. Winholtz, a former city council member, asked about potential money available, and maybe can save that for final comment. But I think that was also a request by Ms. Stedgy. I hope I said your name correctly. That they're looking for collaboration, partnership, but also funding is a big deal. So whatever we know about that. Thank you.
Any input, Mr. Packard?
Yeah, any repairs that are needed will have to be done by the city, and the city's going to have to figure out a way to pay for it. The state revolving fund is available to the city for that for those types of uses, and we'd support certainly their application for those kinds of funds. I don't know what else is available. Potentially the city could work with the IRWMP that the county is involved with and try to elevate the priority some of these things in there. I'm not sure if that if it would rise to that kind of level of funding, but the state revolving fund would be the primary way we could help that I'm aware of.
Thank you, Mr. Packard. On my left, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Mr. Livick, right?
Livick.
Livick. Thank you. Thanks for being here today. So I just want to clarify the CIP process you're talking about right now. If you were to in talking about replacing that line in question, that's an unfunded CIP item, right?
We look at our budget and fund those projects that we have budget available. So currently, it would be an unfunded project. Okay. We would have to move it in. But I just want to talk a little bit about the funding for our collection system projects. We have just hired a sewer and water rate consultant who will be looking at our water rates and sewer rates. And our water and sewer rates need to support our CIP. Okay. So we'll be embarking on that study this summer, looking to bring a final rate to City Council in the fall and a Prop 218 election shortly thereafter with probably new rates imposed after the first of the year. So we are looking towards our CIP with our rates to help fund these projects.
And the process you just described in August, you'll already be into your fiscal year 2015, right?
Correct.
So the opportunity to fund that would actually be fiscal year 2016.
Correct.
Right? So it's really almost 2 years from now.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks. I think that's all I had for you. Harvey, could you remind me or re-educate me on when a municipality like this is operating under a general permit, when does a problem or potential problem rise to the level of our response? What has to happen for us to then play a role in a response, in particular with that gravity line that's being referred to?
Typically, we get involved when they have a spill or a release that's manifested at the surface, okay, you know, on the ground or surface water. That's what most of our enforcement actions entail. If we determine that their management plan is not sufficient or their maintenance or repairs aren't sufficient to control INI or exfiltration, we could request or, I don't know, possibly require them to take certain actions using cease and desist or cleanup and abatement type of actions.
At this point, you don't see any indication or evidence rising to that level, right?
Well, I'm curious along the same lines of your questioning of the status of that line and when it would be replaced. If the city decides to build in the Moro Valley and they need to do major rearrangements in that area, I'd be interested in finding out how long is that going to delay the project. If it's many more years, then I think maybe they ought to consider fixing the line now, and even if they will have to replace it later.
And someone, a muni could also be in compliance with us or with the state order. Santa Barbara, she's them as an example, okay? As mm-hmm. you know, Santa Barbara was presumably in compliance, but a nonprofit group pursued what they thought was lack of compliance through Superior Court and got a Superior Court judge to basically take the sewage collection lines from a capital improvement replacement of, I don't remember the numbers, a couple miles per year to 6 or 8 miles per year. Right. And the city was forced to stipulate to that that agreement and raise rates and get on that work. And it's in fact, I think a month ago, I just saw the annual report back in council chambers on how they're accomplishing that. So it's conceivable that somebody could be shown to be lacking, even though on the surface they're in compliance with both the state orders and our thresholds, right?
Sure. Yeah, in fact, there's been some pretty interesting research about exfiltration and water quality effects, even manifesting in surface water quality, that have come out of that project in Santa Barbara.
Is it a simple process to check for caffeine on a well?
I believe it is, yeah.
Okay. And then does on a couple of those slides in particular, it's just, I don't know if you can get back to them or not. On slide 11 talked about what the slide said was a standard range regarding isotopic signatures for fertilizer versus for sewage in relationship to the Morro Bay wells. So, you know, the one on the bottom's the fertilizer, the next one up is the wells. Are you just in disagreement with that?
Harvey introduced him, I'll restate, I'm Dean Thomas, hydrogeologist, the site cleanup program. Well, what's missing from this picture is actually the oxygen component, the isotope of oxygen. Most researchers use both of those components to kind of differentiate what the signature of the nitrate is, because there are noted overlaps with N-member components. Human waste overlaps with oftentimes a soil organic nitrate signatures, isotopic signatures. So you look at two ranges there. You look at the oxygen and both that and the nitrate. So yes, there is some overlap and with respect to the nitrate. But when you look at the oxygen, as the Cleith report did, the city's consultant, and does numerous studies funded by GAMMA, Dr. Gene Moran, that's how they do it. And you know, it turns out that the signature that Cleith came up with is very similar to what you see in Salinas Valley when you look at both those compounds, but the oxygen side of it. Cleith said that those results were inconclusive because you could get the composition that was seen in all three of those Morrow's wells, which I might add are fairly tight in range, from mixing different M members, say from a chemical fertilizer or a chemical nitrate-based fertilizer, ammonium nitrate-based fertilizer, or an animal waste to get that composition that they got. However, you could have got that composition from denitrification of ammonium nitrate fertilizer. They could have said that, and that's often said in reports I've seen in research, but they said that those results are fairly inconclusive. So this is one, what they presented is one side of the story. You actually, researchers used DELO-18, also that component of the nitrate. And actually, they didn't lift the actual figure from the Cleith report that shows that. So they're only looking at one component, and it's kind of misleading, in my opinion.
Okay. And then on the next slide, on slide 12, kind of have the same question on the relevance to testing periods of high and low times. Do we just not see the relevance there or disagree with that statement?
Okay, yes. Maybe we should go back to the first slide that they present, Harvey, the first graph. Okay, this graph here, you can see over the right is where the real problem is. And in the historic record, that is the spike. And you can see the first indication of that starting to climb. That's in 1996, kind of an indication that you're moving out of baseline period. Okay, if you can't see the scale there, but the baseline period nitrate in City Well 3 is under 20 milligrams per liter nitrate. Then you start to get a climb in nitrate there in 1996. That's before the remedial efforts at the MTB site, which I may add were successful. No MTB turned up in the city's wells. Okay. So now, and this goes to, I believe, 2006 time frame. That's showing about 80 on average, the peak. Now, there's some seasonality in there, because we're looking here from the 50s, I believe, on this slide. Cleef, right about the end of the right-hand side of that slide, went and collected samples in August. Their concentration MB3 was 72. Compare that to the baseline of 20. What event caused 20 to go to, you could split hairs here, to 100 there? It was actually before the M2B cleanup effort, which they contend, the citizens contend, was the dam that broke, okay? So, you know, something else actually happened, and that's all the preponderance of evidence of the actual land use in the lower Mora Valley suggests it was that. Now, so they sampled those wells when nitrate was relatively high, and maybe not the peak level. Okay, so you would expect a component if the source, the primary source of that nitrate was from the city's wells, you'd expect a chemical signature component of that. That's not the case. And in particular, what was mentioned that the northernmost city well versus the southernmost city well, concentrations are higher closer to the sewer lines, lower towards the south. If you look at the chemical composition of all three of those wells, they're identical when you look at the anionic composition. Spot on. There's no indication that there's a mixture of a variable mixture from a septic source. Okay, so that's some of the things we looked at. And like I said, the nitrate signature is when you look at what researchers look at is both the nitrogen isotope and the oxygen isotope in nitrate fairly tightly bound. Composition, and also the anionic composition, fairly tight. These are the two lines of evidence we looked at, and we agreed with Cleef that the nitrate, you could say it's inconclusive if you're not a researcher. Researchers would like to say it indicates it's a denitrification of ammonium nitrate-based fertilizer. But, you know, the proponents, those are the two lines of evidence, and I'm suggesting that actually those are indicating that it's not a significant source, the waste source is not a significant source. It is lower Mora Valley nitrate, especially when you look at the actual concentrations coming out of that lower Mora Valley, upwards of over 300 milligrams per liter. You have a concentration in lower Mora Valley that can actually cause those concentrations in lower Mora Valley wells. Upwards of now peaking at 170 in MB3. Okay. You can only get that from sewage if you convert all the sources of nitrogen, including inorganic, and then transport across the stream channels that flow east to west. Okay. So, yeah, I agree that, you know, you want to make sure you fix all the potential nitrate sources. But the main one really is staring us right in the face.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome, Mayor Delgado.
Yeah, I wanted to ask the two citizens, Marlo, Joe, and Linda, why they didn't include any information about the oxygen isotope or other constituents, and why you only focused on the nitrogen signatures.
We did look at the oxygen, but we didn't choose to include it in here. We're not chemists. Marla Jo and Richard Sadowski did a report in 2007 about the problem with the sewer lines. And at that time, they did use a consulting chemist. And I know that because he's my brother, a retired chemist. And he looked at the chemistry, and he felt this was the most compelling information, and so that's why we included it. None of us are chemists, so we can't really discuss that in any detail.
All right, and you're more of an expert on this issue than I am because you've obviously compiled a lot of information and studied it. As far as the direct lines of evidence, you've probably read the staff report.
Yes.
And you've heard even before the staff report about the direct lines of evidence that staff is using to conclude that
yes.
Morro Bay Ag is the primary source. And they're saying in the staff report, staff are saying that upon review of your report, that you don't provide direct measurable evidence in support of sewage being the predominant source of the pollutants.
Yes.
So after all you've heard today, do you stand just as strongly in disagreement that your lines of evidence are just as valid as staff's?
I do. We have responded to all of their commentary. I believe most of that is now attached to the agenda, which is online. My last response will not be online because we did not find their latest commentary until the cutoff for publishing things. But we did refute all of their comments with our own. We believe, as I believe we noted in the presentation, that the patterns of the fertilizer use in the Moro Valley are not reflected in the long term with the patterns of the fluctuations in the nitrate concentrations in the wells. If you take a short period, you can get a correlation there, but if you take it over a longer period of time, the correspondence is simply not there, and we have put that in writing, and that so that should be available, and we'd be glad to provide that documentation to you if you'd like.
Has the documentation you provided already conclude why you believe the 1998 levels of nitrate went from 20 to approximately 100 before the MTBE drill?
Yes, that we believe is due to something that we just began looking into fairly recently. We had thought that the section of the sewer line that runs down Atascadero Road west of Main Street would not likely be a problem because it was repaired in 1998, but recently we decided to look into that anyway, just in case. And we discovered that there was a lot of information about that line having been in very poor condition for a long time, and it's located in an area where there seems to be a tendency for sinkholes to form. And we found a study done in 1998 by a professional reviewer, a video reviewer or inspector of sewer lines, that showed a tremendous amount of trouble in that line that could not be attributed to sinkholes. It looked like it was just deterioration that might also have something to do with erosion in that area. You know, it's near the ocean, and I am certainly no geologist, but I think if it were sandstone or something, that might explain it. But it looks to us at this point like that jump in the early 90s might very well be related to that, because when the city started digging, when the sinkholes formed in the corporate yard, they would say, uh-oh, did this get our sewer line? So they brought some people in and started doing some excavations, and they had an awful time excavating because the water table there is above where the sewer lines are. They dug for 3 days, and they managed to expose just one pipe connection. But I have a letter that was written by the director of public works at that time, who was very alarmed. He said that one pipe joint that they found was separated by at least 3 inches in a connection that's supposed to be watertight. And this was in a letter that he wrote asking the city to declare a public health emergency to get that fixed.
Linda, I don't want us to take too much time.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But the last thing I want to say to you is that I appreciate you and all the work that Marla Jo have done. It's unusual that we get such well-organized information. And just want to say thank you for all your work.
Well, thank you very much for your attention to this. We very much appreciate it.
All right. Just a quick question to Rob Livick, if I may. Mr. Livick, what do you think? I know that there's budget finances are very tight for municipalities, but what would you estimate would be the minimum number of years and the maximum number of years that it would take, that it will take to fix the Main Street trunk line?
Fixing the Main Street trunk line is a fairly easy construction project. It's probably a couple months worth of construction. It's not digging up and replacing it. More than likely, it's lining that line. We need to make sure that we're not wasting that money, and if we're having to make major improvements to changes in our collection system, that we don't do this twice. So that would be my caveat to that. And I just want to point out, if we thought the major source of nitrates was from our own collection system to our own municipal wells, we wouldn't have spent a ton of money looking at the hydrogeology and the agricultural area. We would have spent that money on our collection system lines repairing it. It would have been much easier to do than assessing the where the nitrate is coming from.
All right. So I understand that you wouldn't want to piecemeal it when you're going to do a wholesale revision to the system, but would you say it's more on the order of 2 to 10 years or 10 to 30 years?
2 to 10 years.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So my input is, you know, the following. I think the bottom line here is you have a half a century old sewer system, and we can point fingers where it's coming from, but it's an old system. We talk about infiltration, exfiltration, and ultimately, even regardless of the source of nitrate, you know, it sounds like, you know, this is a system that requires, you know, upgrade. And I guess the area I'm a little uncomfortable is that several of us, starting with Mr. Young, you know, tried to ask more specific of a timeline, and it seems very difficult right now to get any sense. You know, in fact, Mr. Delgado gave a very generous 30-year span to try to narrow this thing down a little bit. So I guess I'm a little concerned that because I would view just the fact that you do have an old system, you know, that this is not, I would have liked to hear, well, this is our one of our priority items, you know, we have ranked, this is one of the first we're going to address. I haven't heard that. I hear, well, we have budget, and as Mr. Jordan correctly pointed out, well, that's 2016. So then you go through all of the engineering, well, then we move to 2017. Well, we're in 2014. So I think there is a need to put a little bit of a sense of urgency in terms of a prioritization of this known problem. Having said that, I would submit that there is perhaps a little piece of scientific evidence that could have been used, is that you did the radioisotope fingerprinting of the nitrates. But there is another technology available, which is aging. And we're able very accurately now to age nitrates. And I would suggest that if and it's not an expensive test, by the way. You know, we're talking $800 per sample. So if we had a nitrate aging done within, you know, the water from the sewer system and nitrate aging from the source of the wells, we could also, in a sense, triangulate what you suggested in terms of a preponderance of evidence. That technology is available. You know, it's something that you could do next month. So the same as the concept of using caffeine. It seems to me we have the technology available, and that would put the issue to rest. So I guess I'll leave my comment on that, unless you want to add to my suggestion about aging test.
Yes, if I may. I think you're referring to tritium helium age dating technique.
Yep.
And I looked it up. It's about $1,000. Plus, it's a specialty type of sampling. You have to crimp a copper tube, and I think it's more research based at this point. Maybe not. And it would be great to see that data. I do have some concerns, however, because the source of the water coming into the city's wells, hypothetically, some from sewer exfiltration, so most of it probably from the lower Moro Valley, but as Cleith has pointed out, they also get water from direct percolation of rainfall in the lower area, and you also get it from the creek. I think roughly 20-30%. So that's all fair. Those two sources could also be fairly young water. So that could kind of muddy the water, so to speak, and you probably want to collect several samples, so you're looking at a few thousand dollars. So, you know, yes, we could collect that data. It'd be nice data to see. I would suggest if you could collect a lot of the general mineral chemistry once again, but I don't think it's going to necessarily be a smoking gun in this case unless all those age dates come up at 10, 12 years. That would indicate that all that water is from the Moro Valley. But we do pretty darn sure that a lot of it comes from the creek recharge, and some of it comes from rainfall, which is going to be, may have a fairly young signature.
You know, the cost is about $850 because at one of our presentation we had here in this room regarding the groundwater monitoring program, we had a couple of the scientists who performed these tests. So I specifically asked for the cost. It's $850, and the samples are taken to Sandia Lab in Livermore, where the test is performed. This is not bleeding edge of the technology. Because, for example, Orange County use the water aging test as a way to meet the permitting requirement that the water pumped is at least a year old. So, you know, it's totally doable. But I still would like to perhaps, you know, have a you know, no, it's probably not within your limits of authority within the city to come to the podium and make a firm commitment. But you know, I still think there is a need for a little better sense of timetable urgency to get these sewer lines brought up to, you know, current functionality.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, I have a similar concern or question. So if the wells, you know, about muddying the water, so if you're pulling 12-year-old water into the wells, you're distributing to the citizens, they're using it, it's going back into the sewer, and it leaks back into the wells again, and you're sampling it, how are you going to differentiate between water that's coming directly from the valley and water that came from the valley you serve to the public that then leaks out of the sewer? There's not going to be any difference. Correct?
Well, if you sample the actual water from the wells, it's going to come up with zero.
No. My point is tritium and that type of isotope has typically historically been used to age date, you know, water of geologic age or, you know, things like that. It has not, I don't think, typically been used to differentiate 12 years. And my concern is the water source is the same. What you are serving to the public and what is coming down that valley, in essence, is the same water. So how are you going to use an isotope to differentiate between the two?
Well, the tritium helium dates, you can get from 0 to 30 years. But like you said, there's recycling going on here because you're pumping out of the groundwater. It's going to, you know, to citizens, businesses that are coming back to pipeline.
Yeah, the travel time
between. So that is a complication of the signatures coming out of it.
Right. What's the, if the city could tell us, what's the residence time in the distribution system from the time you pump it? 30 years? Or how about 2 days or a day? Or
I'd say closer to the day.
Yeah. So I think, Mr. Chair, I think that's, I think that using tritium or something is not going to give us the answer. I would suggest that if we're going to ask the city to do something, that we use something that's more conservative, more specific, like caffeine, for example. Although even from the valley, I mean, people drink caffeine and it goes into their septic systems, and even that could leak into. But I think that would be a better choice than something like oxygen isotopes.
And perhaps I can give the board a better indication on our time frame. Our council has made a commitment by resolution to have our new wastewater treatment plant completed within a top 5-year time frame. So we're not talking 30 years out, 10 years out on this project happening. We are committed to moving forward with our wastewater treatment plant project at full speed and in 5 years. So that would be the within that time frame is when we would be looking at, you know, major collection system upgrades.
So could you respond to possibly the willingness of a city to perform a caffeine test?
We would be willing to perform a caffeine test. It's a fairly inexpensive test. We can do that within a matter of days or weeks, not years.
All right. I like the days or weeks answer. Any other? Yes.
And my question would be, do you have authority to ask for that test yourself, or does someone else have to do that?
Yes, I have authority. It's within my purchasing limits.
Good. Okay.
So, any
Mr.
other?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Jordan?
The staff report actually asks for assistance or direction on staff resources, and I would certainly support the recommendation in the staff report of not pursuing additional staff time and resources to responding to this issue other than to see the results of the caffeine test.
Yes, Dr. Hunter?
Yes, I agree with Mr. Jordan. I would only add one item, which came up with the potential support for applying for an SRF, which I think we typically work with our stakeholders on applying for SRF, and that would be the only other action that staff, I think, could be very effective in assisting with that.
If I could, we do work with them. We've had numerous meetings with the city. We've talked about the funding that's available right now. There's $1 billion for recycled water. We've encouraged them to try to get their hooks into that water. So absolutely, anytime we meet with folks, we talk about upgrades, we talk about sources of funding and our willingness to support their request to Sacramento.
So this being an informational item, I'd like to kind of see if all of us are comfortable with the direction without necessarily going to a formal vote here, but I hear, we get a better narrowing of the upgrades. We have potentially some funding source suggested. I certainly personally like, the willingness of a city to perform the caffeine test. So I think we have enough on hand right now to kind of move forward, and like certainly to thank, yes.
One point of clarification, how would you, when we get the results back, how would you like us to distribute that? Or, there's a couple of things. One, it may show that the city's sewer system is not the source. It may show that the city's sewer system is the source. It may show that, once again, that, it's a blend of some sewer, but mostly ag. Groundwater coming down the valley that's been impacted by ag fertilizer.
Well, our next meeting is in a couple of months, and the city indicated its willingness to get this test done in the next few days or weeks, so that gives plenty of time to provide the information back to staff, and then we could have an update at our next meeting in July.
Do you that for September?
Yeah.
September, and yeah. Do you want that as an information item, or do you want that as an agendized item?
I think at this stage an informational item.
Okay.
Unless my colleagues see otherwise. Mr. Johnston?
Yeah, depending on the results. I mean, I suppose it's conceivable that the results will flatly contradict everything that staff thinks is going on. That could happen. I'm fine leaving it up to the discretion of the chair and the executive officer if it's an agenda item or an information item.
Okay. Dr. Hunter?
Yes, I agree with Mr. Johnston. I was only going to suggest that it could possibly be included in the EO's report.
Mr. Young?
And that would be fine with me. I just would want staff and the city's and the public's opinion on what they think the data indicates, and whether and my hope is that it better informs all of us as to what the potential risk is to there being human waste coming into the system, and how that might change the priority ranking of sewer line replacements in the future. That's what I'm looking for out of this.
All right.
Opinions.
So I think, yes.
So
Mr.
just a
Harris.
Point I want to be real clear on the record is we're not talking about a threat to human health. It is, unless the city wants to tell us that they're serving water that doesn't meet DHS standards, or you are having sanitary sewer overflows, or the public is directly exposed to wastewater, there is no direct public health. And if anyone, I think, does anybody disagree with that statement? I want to be absolutely clear about that. Yep, gentlemen.
Yes, please come to the podium.
Richard Sadowski. To answer your question, I think that this is an urgent matter, and let me just backtrack a little bit. With regards to the test, it's going to be important that the test, the timing of the test, is done properly. As a collection system operator, there's peak dry weather or peak daily flows. So when the wells are running, and if you incorporate the data that we've talked about the plume of sewage getting into that, so we would definitely like to talk to staff and making sure that that testing is done properly at the right time. And regards to the public health issue, I think that after, if satisfied about the test data being done properly, we can come back and then address that issue at that time.
Well, I think you know, staff from the city of Morro Bay, you know, have trained specialists, and there is a protocol that is used for sampling. So I'm comfortable about you know, that aspect. You had a comment?
I just want to agree with Mr. Harris that water quality, serving of safe drinking water, when I'm wearing my drinking water hat, is my primary goal. We do not provide the public with unsafe drinking water. Thank you.
Thank you. And to kind of wrap up here, there'll be Mr. Johnston and then Dr. Hunter, and I think we have this item wrapped up.
Two comments. The members of the public that have come before us said from the start that their principal concern was impact on water quality, groundwater and ocean water. Second, in terms of the timing of the test, Mr. Chair, you did elicit a commitment to do that test in the next few weeks, but I think the point is well made that the test probably has to be done at a time when the wells are pumping at a sufficient level that the results are meaningful, and I don't know how that works schedule-wise.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you. I wanted to mention that while we have public health standards, and all cities, all municipalities, all public water systems are required to meet those standards, we also understand that there are contaminants in the waste stream that we don't test for, emerging contaminants. And so if there is any indication that sewage is entering the water system, and there are repairs that can be made to eliminate that to the best extent we can, that is the goal. So, you know, public health standards are important, but at this point, it isn't possible to keep up with the level of hormones and other contaminants that we know are present in our waste stream. So it is an urgent matter. I totally agree.
I just wanted to add one thing, that I think that if we knew that we had a component of human waste getting into the water system, that we would look at this differently. I don't think we would just say, well, we're going to rely upon the supply water treatment processes to take care of our concerns. I don't think we would allow it to go the way it's going at this point. So, I mean, I agree with what Dr. Hunter just said. We don't test for a lot of things because there's no regulatory standards. But I think our assumption is that our supply sources for drinking water don't contain human waste. And that sets up kind of a decision-making matrix that we go through in terms of how we're going to treat. So I think it's important to kind of flush this out as far as we can at this point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. And did you have a comment?
Yes, Marla Jo Bruton Sadowski. I just wanted to add, I'm the one that this chart right here that said, hey, look at what's happening. The reason I even looked into this is that in November of 2006, Morro Bay residents were delivered unsafe drinking water through our taps for 3 or 4 days. And the notification was very lacking. They didn't notify the local public health department. I mean, they didn't get the word out to people. So for, you know, a couple of days at least, people were getting high nitrated water from their taps. And Mr. Livick says that they give the boil water admonition. Well, if you boil nitrated water, it concentrates the nitrate level. So, I mean, that's what they did. They did put that out, and they said, boil your water, you know. But there were children, there were mothers finally that came back afterward and said, you know, I boiled the water and gave it to my infant. That could have caused blue baby syndrome and death. So I just want to be clear. I didn't start coming after this as any kind of expert in all of this. I was a mother and a grandmother who saw a need for the citizens to take a look at this. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you for your comment. And I think we have a direction. Any closing remark, Mr. Harris?
No, I think I understand the board's direction.
All right. And we're comfortable, Mr. Packard? So this time I'd like us to take our break, and we will reconvene at 10 past 1. Yes?
But I need to announce closed session, and the board will be discussing personnel in closed session.